More of Lake Effect now. I'm Mitch Teich. Quickly, what is 17% of 5550? Or maybe 20%. Unless you had a horrible meal, often the worst part of going out to eat is figuring out the tip, unless there are six or more of you, in which case the tip is often included. But some restaurants around the country are adopting a more European approach, and they're either building the cost of service into the cost of the food or just automatically adding a surcharge to the bill. The phenomenon is chronicled in a recent New York Times article, and that interested dining contributor Ann Christensen. She talked with Dan Harmon about whether she thinks it's a good idea for restaurants to go tip-free.
I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons to get rid of it, but one of the ones that I thought was kind of brought up as an example in these articles that we've been hearing or reading now, obviously Pete Wells, New York Times restaurant critic, weighing in on this topic, was just the angst that a diner feels as they're trying to add the tip to the bill. The angst. So to eliminate the angst, I don't feel any angst. So that would not be the reason. I think if, as we've kind of talked about, servers are making their hourly wage is so low that you can't make a living on that alone. You know, and they can't rely on people giving them tips. It just doesn't work that way, or giving them good tips. You can't even offer quote unquote great service and just assume that you're going to get a 20% tip or more, or 15, really. Because diners make that choice. That being said, I think there are arguments to add the tip to the bill, you know, have it already part of that as an extra charge, I guess, or to raise the hourly wage of servers.
So the, okay, if it's angst might be a bit strong for some diners, but it's still an annoyance, and it's not necessarily the best way to end the meal. I mean, of course, you know, getting a bill, who wants to get a bill? But then there is this kind of dance about, was the service good? How much do I
Absolutely.
Owe? Blah, blah, blah. So it might be nice to just walk away and knowing that they're compensated for what they just did.
Well, it's awkward. And when you're doing it and you see the server kind of lingering because maybe they're saying something like, you know, my shift is almost over. Do you mind if we settle the bill now? So they're trying, you know, you're trying to do this and they're kind of watching you, and you kind of know that they're watching you decide what kind of tip you're going to leave them, you know? So it's an awkward point of the meal. But, you know, Wells, one of the arguments that he raised was that because you're tipping at the end of the meal, it doesn't incentivize good service. Because it's at the end of the meal. If it's already included, let's say servers, you know, this is part of what they do every day. Their wage does not vary, okay? It's a higher wage. Whatever they're getting is higher. It's not dependent on tips. So maybe they go into their job saying, you know what? I'm happy. This makes me a happier person. I can make a living. So this is what I'm going to do for every table that I serve. I'm going to give it the best service I can.
I mean, yeah, that presupposes that you do get better service if you tip more, which, of course, doesn't really – I mean, it's a prediction at this point because it's not,
It's a prediction, exactly. Right. You don't know.
You just don't know. So,
but he starts out that article, I'm sorry, but saying that if you want better service in a restaurant, you need to be, number one, very famous. Number two, spend $1,000 or more on wine every time you go out. Or number three, keep going to the same restaurant over and over until you get the VIP treatment. Provided that were, right. would even be the case.
Well, the part of that argument that sort of bugs me is that good service should just be part of a restaurant's business. I mean, it shouldn't have anything to do with the tip. It should just be because they appreciate your business and that you're patronizing their business. And that should just be a given that no matter how much you spend, you're going to get good service. I mean, are they not shooting themselves in the foot if they're saying it's totally tip reliant?
Well, it should carry down from the owner to, you know, the bus staff, don't you think? Everybody on the staff should be feel like they're part of that team, and that nobody, you know, maybe, you know, everybody's part of it, and so therefore, you know, the servers really feel strongly about what they're doing. And yes, I am agreeing with what you're saying, but that's, you know, that doesn't happen. You know, you know that doesn't happen. And I talk to people about this because service in Milwaukee, too, especially, I think is generally poor. And restaurant owners will say, oh, it's really hard to find good servers. You You know, sometimes it's, you know, they're younger, they're in school, and it's not something they want to do for a living. It's just something they're doing to pay the bills. So they don't. So in that respect, they don't really have an incentive. They just think of it as, you know, I'm just trying to make some money here, move on with my life. I don't have a passion for this. I mean, it's rare you're going to find a server that has a passion for serving, unless it's a really fine restaurant and they're really into it. They're into the concept. They're into the food. They're into everything. And they like people.
Sounds nice.
It does, doesn't it? It does. But you go to big cities. You go to New York and Chicago and you've got people like that, I'm sure. You've got people probably that are making a living doing it,
yeah.
A good living.
Well, the other part of this, which is sort of a can of worms, is that if you are a reasonably well-informed diner, you know that the tip trickles down. It trickles down to various other employees in the business, and it just makes it seem a little odd to me in some ways. I've always thought it was odd that, you know, I'm tipping our server knowing that they're going to tip the bus person, the busser, maybe the people that are washing dishes, and it just seems like, yeah.
They divvy it up at the end of the day.
There's such pressure.
But is that across the board the way it works?
I don't know. You never know.
I don't know. I mean, I know there are restaurants where that is what they do. And then, yeah, you might feel like, well, listen, I wanted this, the one who really, like, broke their back. Well, not broke their back. Okay, fine. they went above and beyond what might have seemed, you know, regular service. They really went out of their way to be, you know, a shining example of a server. I don't know. And so you feel as the diner, you want to reward them for that. You don't want to reward the entire staff because you don't think they deserve it. So I guess that it does raise that question. I mean,
because I'm not a geopolitical labor expert who knows the ins and outs of who's getting what money for doing what task. I mean, I feel like diners are put on the spot sometimes through their tip to address these issues of pay. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot to ask of someone that just wants dinner.
Yeah, well, it is interesting because it raises these things that in some ways you don't even really want to think about. But as we were we're talking about this, you think of busboys or bus people, I don't want to genderize them, and they deserve something, right? Do you ever go to a restaurant and think, "Oh, I want this $10 to be specifically for that bus person"? Nobody does that. And yet they deserve to be compensated. I don't know, you know, especially if they're doing the best, at what it is they're assigned to do. Right. And a lot of them are kids that are 16. It's maybe their first job. They're just learning the ropes and they're working hard. I mean,
do you think any restaurants in Milwaukee are going to try it?
No, I don't. I just don't think that I feel like, I mean, someone would really need to go out there and obviously set, you know, make the step and do it. And I'm not sure that any one of them would do that. I don't know. I could be wrong, though. I mean, there's one place that I think of that perhaps would do it. I could see maybe Sanford doing something like that. I'm not saying they would, but that to me that would be the one I think of. But I just don't know. I mean, I feel like a lot of, you know, and when you get in more into the more middle-priced restaurants, I don't know. I just feel like that is just not something that would happen by and large here.
I think someone should try it.
I agree. I think it's worth the experiment. Yeah, absolutely.
See what happens. All right. Well, let's change subjects radically here. Something that's been getting a lot of attention lately is the water sommelier in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the water connoisseur. Tell us about that. Tell us, first of all, a little background on that.
I love this. Okay, so there's a restaurant in Los Angeles by the name of Reyes and Stark. And the GM is a German gentleman who is also a certified water sommelier. Now, most people have heard of wine sommeliers, but they haven't heard of water sommeliers. But he apparently has this training he's very much a connoisseur of water. And he will say that in Germany, there are 580, I believe he's being quoted as saying 580 different kinds of bottled water. And Europeans are generally very discriminating about water, whether it's still or sparkling. And I don't think that Americans have that same kind of discriminating taste for water. But I may be wrong because I know people that'll say, oh, I don't like Evian. I really like Fiji, or vice versa, or, you know, that are very particular about the bottled water they will buy and drink. And I'm a big fan of sparkling.
And they'll be looked at sideways for saying it, but
exactly.
They might be onto something.
They might be onto something. But so, and when you think about the premise here, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, water from different regions is going to have, you know, a different salt content, a different mineral content. So many of the environmental variables are going to affect the water, what the water is going to be like. And this guy is saying that the kind of water, the type of water that you drink is going to maybe, just as wine could enhance your meal, the water could enhance your meal. And the water that you drink with wine could also be something that enhances each other. So anyway, this guy, it's actually kind of an interesting thing. They have a menu. This particular restaurant, Raisin Stark, has quite a few bottled waters from 10 different countries on their menu, and they have a water tasting menu as well.
For $12.
For $12.
Hey, that's not bad. If you consider paying $2 for a bottle of water, it's not atypical.
Well, okay, when you think of beverages, though, that are really good for you, that are essential for the human body, what is that one beverage that you think of? It's not wine. It's
gin.
Not coffee. It's not gin. It is H2O. And why not give it the most attention, or give it the attention it deserves, and not just say, tap water. You know.
I mean, I agree. There are different tasting waters. I mean, you can get some foul-smelling sulfur kind of water and no one would touch it.
Right.
So why not the other end of that scale? Sure.
It's true. It's true. So I find this kind of fascinating. You know, I don't see this becoming a huge trend in the United States, but I could be wrong. It certainly doesn't hurt to offer a lot of different waters on your menu, I guess, and see how it goes if people are ordering them, or whether they're losing money on it. I don't know.
I can see some restaurants here advertising the Icelandic water and some of the other more exotic, quote-unquote, waters. And sure, I think people would go for it. No?
Yeah. I simply don't know. I'm kind of a water snob, though. I do. I love sparkling waters. I love different types of bottled waters too. But this actually, I laughed when I read about this, because I thought this was pretty amusing.
I think you need to book a flight to LA and just go to this restaurant for water.
I think I do. I think I need to book a flight to Germany and check out all those different varieties of waters. Yes, thank you.
All right. Ann Christensen, thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
Ann Christensen is dining critic and senior editor at Milwaukee Magazine and our regular dining contributor. She spoke with Dan Harmon. When was the last time you were really unsettled by a book? Wendy Webb's latest novel promises to send a chill up your spine, and we'll get some insight into just how she does it when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.